the last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Time for our weekly environment spot with John Gibbons, the environmental commentator. And I want to start, John, with the EU Commission. An expert group for it has stated that nuclear energy can be treated as sustainable under EU green investments. Nuclear energy, sustainable, green. How does that work?
Yeah, Matt, it's an interesting one. Nuclear energy provides quite a chunk of our power across Europe. For example, countries like France, Sweden, Finland, even the UK, they all receive substantial parts of their energy from nuclear power.
And isn't it filthy, John? You have the extraordinarily dangerous waste from it, which can take centuries before it actually dissolves and is always a concern and worry where it's buried. And also you have the risk of environmental catastrophe if you have a leakage from any of these plants.
Yeah, I guess with nuclear, we've lived with nuclear now as an energy source probably for maybe 60 years. In that time, of course, we've famously had a couple of major incidents like Chernobyl and Fukushima. But in reality, Matt, the number of deaths per terawatt hour of electricity, this is a measure they use across the industry, for nuclear over that whole period is lower even than wind energy and solar. And you might say, how do people die in the wind energy industry and solar? Well, they do things like fall off roofs during installation. So all of those deaths are counted. So the total number of deaths and serious injury from nuclear energy over the last 50 to 60 years has been extraordinarily low. The other thing, Matt, that's probably more important, or at least as important these days, is that nuclear is a genuinely ultra-low carbon form of electricity. Now, before we came on today, I had a look on an app that shows you the energy generation around Europe. And the cleanest country in Europe at the moment for energy is Sweden. And basically, they're producing at the moment about 45 grams of CO2 per kilowatt hour of energy. Now, Ireland, while we're doing quite well, as we've talked about before in the program with wind energy, say today, Ireland is producing about four or five times more emissions because a good portion of our grid today is from fossil fuels. So if you look at France, Matt, for example, about 77 grams, and they're running today about 40 gigawatts of nuclear power. So this is one of Europe's biggest countries, and it's dominant. About 70% of its electricity is coming from near zero carbon. But you did also ask, of course, about the risks. Okay, let's take the waste,
because you've got spent nuclear fuel from nuclear reactors. You've got uranium mill tailings from the mining and milling of uranium ore. You've got the high-level waste from the spent nuclear fuel reprocessing, and more and more and more.
Sure, absolutely. All of these things, it's important to say, are measured in tons. The problem is carbon emissions from fossil fuel are measured in billions of tons. Now, when you're getting rid or disposing of something that you measure in tons or hundreds of tons, that's an engineering problem. So, for example, this has been looked at by the European agency that's involved in this. It's called the Joint Research Centre. And they made the point, for example, that you can bury and permanently embed nuclear waste in solid rock formations, say that haven't moved in the last, say, 10 or 15 million years. That's one way of doing it. The other, of course, the more efficient way of doing it is what's called reprocessing. That means essentially you take so-called spent nuclear energy, and if it's still highly radioactive, Matt, that means it's still got energy. So what you do is you reprocess it, you burn it again until you've burned it to a very low level. So I guess the key point here is that nuclear energy, the risks associated with it are engineering level risks. The risks associated with continuous CO2 burning are existential risks. We can't manage the uncontrolled dumping of 40 billion tons of CO2. But in the case of nuclear, we're talking here again in hundreds and low thousands of tons. And these are problems that advanced economies, and we're talking about countries like France, Sweden, Finland. These are well-run countries, Matt, that have grappled with the problem of what to do. And let me give you another example, if I might. After the Fukushima disaster in Japan in 2011, Germany, the Greens in Germany, put a lot of pressure on the government to decommission nuclear, and they were successful. So 10 out of the 17 nuclear plants in Germany were decommissioned since 2012. What's happened as a result is that German overall carbon emissions have shot up because they replaced the nuclear power with coal burning. And a study was done this last year, and it's estimated that the additional pollution cost is costing Germany an extra $12 billion a year and killing an extra 1,100 Germans per annum because of the additional air pollution cost of switching from nuclear to coal burning. So these are things sometimes that, while we understandably get ourselves into a panic about the nuclear risk, the fact is that coal burning and other fossil fuel burnings are killing tens of thousands of people a day, every day. So I guess it's all a balance. In energy, it's always a question of balancing of risk.
Okay, well, one final thing. So, because it's back, was it the 1970s when there was a suggestion of a nuclear power plant for Ireland, Cairnsore Point down in Wexford. We now have it written into law that we cannot have nuclear energy being created in this island. We don't mind buying it in via the interconnectors, but we're pure enough to say that we will never, ever manufacture it on this island. Do you think is that ever likely to be overturned, or would there be any point in that perhaps a nuclear power plant would be too big for the Irish market?
Well, let me start with the size thing first of all. We've had nuclear reactors operating in confined areas like nuclear-powered submarines and large ships like icebreakers for decades. So these are small. You can have a nuclear unit that can be as small as 100 megawatts. So they can be scaled down. They're called SNRs, that's small nuclear reactors. So the scale issue isn't a problem. I guess if I had a magic wand, I would probably replace the Money Point coal burning facility in Clare with a nuclear generator that would provide ultra low carbon backup to the build out of a massive electrical grid. And we've talked again on the show before about what do you do in the dips with your more variable renewable energy. And of course, nuclear does provide what's called baseload energy, ultra clean. And I appreciate this will upset a lot of people who regard themselves as environmentalists. I'm a pragmatist in this. I want to see ultra low carbon energy that doesn't burn down the future. And if nuclear is one way to get there, I'll take it.
Okay, let's move on to other things. What's your take on the decision of Cork City to pedestrianise 17 city centre streets?
Yeah, I think it's terrific. I went to college in Cork many years ago, and the city centre between Patrick Street and the Quays is absolutely perfect. It's a sort of a warren of smaller streets, and I was really delighted because pushing, you know, full vehicular traffic down these little warren of streets is so unpleasant. It puts pedestrians in really uncomfortable proximity with large moving vehicles. And we know, even going back to the Roman Empire, they actually, as far back as 2,000-3,000 years ago, they blocked vehicular traffic from their city centres after about 7 o'clock in the morning, because they, even at that stage, they'd realised that the, you know, heavy vehicles and people are not compatible. So I think it's a terrific move. And I think giving back, this shouldn't be seen, by the way, as a competition between pedestrians and motorists, because we're all pedestrians, we're all motorists, we're all occasionally cyclists. So it's a question of what's the best way to allocate very finite space in our city centres. And for me, there's a concept called the 15-minute city, and that's a city centre like Cork is a perfect example of this. And that is that an adult can comfortably walk from one side of your city centre to the other in 15 minutes. And the best description, Matt, that I've heard of a modern city is a city that you can have a 5-year-old child on, you know, holding by the hand, and if you let them go for a few seconds, you're not worried that they're going to be killed instantly. And that's when you remove heavy traffic from our cities, suddenly what you get back is you get trade. And of course, post-COVID, we need to give space for our restaurateurs, for our shops and so on to flow out onto the street. And what we're seeing is a rejuvenation. This could be one of the really unexpected dividends of this whole crisis, is a rejuvenation and a recovery and a reimagining of our city centres, including, I hope, people to actually go and live over shops and so on. I think that's a very European idea, but we've been very slow on the uptake. A lot of the Irish cities suffer from what they call the donut effect, where they're hollowed out in the centre and people instead do all their commercial activity on the fringes. It'd be wonderful to see our cities alive and vibrant again.
One final one. We have committed to your weekly spot here on The Last Word in Today FM, discussing environmental issues, and we'll continue our expansion of environmental coverage on other days. But you want to tell us about something that's happening on television.
Yes, Matt. This is really really big news. Basically, Sky News, that's the UK Sky News, launched last night what they call a dedicated program covering the climate, the global climate crisis. And it's called the Daily Climate Show. And basically, it broadcasts, it started yesterday, by the way. First broadcast was at 6:30 p.m. So this is prime time broadcasting. And it's presented by Anna Jones, and it's a 15-minute show. And basically, it broadcasts at 6:30 p.m. and it's rebroadcast at 9:30 p.m. And Sky have made a commitment, Matt, to broadcast this 5 days a week, 10 times a week, indefinitely. And as you said, it's, I think what we're seeing now is more and more broadcasters getting the memo and recognizing that there is a big public demand to understand the crisis. And we need to start covering it as though it were something that affects our lives every day, not something that we just talk about once in the blue moon like Christmas. And I think this step by Sky, I watched their opening program last night, by the way, very professional, very sleek. And I will say, some people may be skeptical about Sky News because in other parts of the world, their record is not so good. But Sky News UK outfit have been serious about climate coverage for as long as I've been following them. And their head of Sky News, a guy called John Riley, he said, he's been in journalism, he said, about 40 years. And he said, in that time, the environment story has always been covered episodically. He said, it's covered in fits and starts. And he wanted to make sure to make it clear to people that by launching this show, that climate change is happening right now, all the time, and that they're going to cover it with the same methodical approach that we cover political journalism, that we cover business journalism, and so on. And that is something, that I'm so keen to see this spread across the media. I hope maybe that if RT is listening, I hope that they might consider something similar.
Okay, we should, of course, mention that Sky, of course, no longer owned by the Murdoch organization News Corp. It's part of Comcast now, which might have something to do with that.
I was going to mention that, Matt.
John Gibbons, thank you very much for being with us here. We'll talk to you again next week here on The Last Word on Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.